Welcome back, everybody. This is the Airplane Geeks episode 46. I'm Courtney. With me, as always, is Max. Hello, Max.
Hey, Court. How's it going? Hello, everybody.
And this week, we're joined once again by Kevin Garrison. You should remember Kevin, from episode 25. He is writer, editor, and creative mind. And he's also the recent author of The CEO of the Cockpit, which is now in hardback, paperback?
Yes.
Both.
Yes, it is. It's going to be in paperback. I have. They give you one hardback copy that you can, you know, I don't know what you're supposed to do with it, but
you can show your friends.
Yeah, show your friends, you know, take whatever.
So. Kevin, thanks for joining us again.
Well, thank you for having me.
You know, it really does take quite a patient person to make it through one episode with us, and then to come back. I mean, you're really kind of a glutton for punishment, don't you think?
Well, like I said earlier, I just like to hear the sound of my voice. You know?
Another opportunity.
Yeah.
And I would like to apologize to Kevin right off the bat. He had actually sent us a voicemail last week that had just gotten in after we had recorded, so we didn't get a chance. But he sent us a nice voicemail from Sun and Fun, which I am not going to play because we're going to hear enough of you tonight anyways, Kevin. So
more than enough, yes. That's fine. That'll come out in the box set later.
Yes, in the box set. We have quite a bit of news, so gentlemen, what do you say we jump into it?
Let's get started.
First up, this news item comes from the New York Times. Airlines seek to reassure passengers in outbreak. Lufthansa has placed a doctor on board each of its flights to Mexico. American Airlines has issued medical kits to cabin crews. British Airways is distributing face masks, and Alaska Airways is removing pillows as fears of a flu pandemic rattled the global aviation industry. Carriers are doing their utmost to reassure passengers that in the absence of travel restrictions by the World Health Organization, air travel is still safe, while accommodating those who may not wish to fly. So far, cancellations have been minimal, European airlines say, though the situation is more complicated in the Americas. Just to give you an idea of what happened from the SARS crisis, they call it, of 2003, they said traffic to Asia fell 50% and about 24% worldwide in 3 months ending in May of that year, and that's from SARS, and they're concerned that the same thing is going to be hitting the North American continent now with the swine flu. Air Canada has canceled all its flights to three destinations in Mexico until June 1st. Continental Airlines, they are the largest U.S. carrier that flies to Mexico, said it would temporarily cut its capacity there by 40%. American Airlines said it's watching demand in response to the outbreak, officially known as influenza, H1N1, or swine flu. In Asia, Cathay Pacific, they are the largest carrier in Hong Kong, said it would allow cabin staff members to wear face masks to work. China has suspended flights from Mexico to Shanghai. Xinhua, is that right, Max?
Close enough.
That comes from the Chinese news agency. So we wouldn't be a current podcast if we didn't talk about swine flu. And this is kind of how some of the airlines are reacting. I've been hearing from some people in the airlines who are looking at loads that they're seeing about 25% load factors into and out of Mexico.
Mm. It's a long ways away from, you know, the SARS outbreak, but the airlines, you know, sort of have to respond in some way, I guess, right?
You know, we've talked about this before, and kind of in the context of, you know, what's the role of the FAA in aviation to make people feel safe? Well, now the airlines have to make people feel comfortable, even if it does absolutely nothing. You know, a doctor on board a Lufthansa flight, okay, really, what's he going to do?
Read.
Yeah. See?
Watch the movie.
Yeah. I mean, so we're supporting the education of the doctors in Germany by giving them extra time to read on aircraft. But, you know, you're right, Max. What are they going to do? I mean, they can't.
There really is nothing that you know, they can do. I don't think. I mean, what they're doing is you know, has the appearance of minimizing the spread, but we're still talking about such, you know, low levels of people with the swine flu. I mean, you know, certainly, you know, some people have died, and that's, you know, a terrible, you know, tragic thing. So not to minimize that, but in terms of world history of pandemics, this is not a hugely significant event so far.
Right. Now, I think what's hurt the airlines most throughout this is our own vice president's comments last week, saying that if it was his family, he wouldn't let them go anywhere because the first time somebody sneezes on an airplane, they're all infected. I'm paraphrasing and probably extrapolating on that, but that's the gist of what he went too far. Told people to stay away from public places, subways, and airplanes. And I'm sure the airlines are getting pounded kind of on both fronts, both by the flu itself, as well as the comments by the vice president.
Well, I was wondering what speech he stole that from, but I couldn't find it. So I guess he must have been, you know, he must have come up with that on his own. I just have this image of them chasing him around with a burlap bag that they're trying to throw over his head before he says anything.
You know, maybe that's why he steals speeches.
I guess so. Yeah. I guess maybe he's, you know, the harbinger of truth, but the, you know, most airlines, Mexico is not exactly your biggest airline market to begin with, and their season's pretty much ending because it gets hotter than the surface of the sun there starting probably next week. So In terms of the airlines, I know their loads are down, but I'm trying to think of an airline except Aeromexico that's really going to suffer from this because, you know, the European season's heating up. They can reallocate their flights to those markets, and the flights they cancel are basically saving them money because they're not paying for fuel and other stuff. So I just don't see a huge, and I wrote this down because I was amazed. People fly from Mexico to Shanghai? My goodness. Gosh. I didn't know that, but it's a lot I don't know. So masks I find kind of silly. I always found it silly that people thought the air on airplanes was bad because it gets swapped out about every 3 or 4 seconds. So anyway.
Yeah.
It certainly is a popular perception that the air is unhealthy.
And I think, Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, but that misconception comes from the idea of recirculation fans, right? I mean, just the idea of recirculation fans, but you're right. I mean, that's new air.
Recirculation fans are, there's probably less, there's definitely less circulation on the newer airplanes because they have recirculation systems to try to save bleed air load, you know. But the air is still getting swapped out every, I'm not an engineer, but a whole lot more than it is at home.
Right, exactly.
It's so probably the safest place you could be in a pandemic would be on an airliner in the air with a bunch of people. So unless they sneeze directly on you, it's just, I can see the logic of not handing out pillows because that's just gross anyway. But because all the stuff, you know, people do to them, but they never get cleaned. The same way with blankets. But
Alaska can never, ever go back to pillows and blankets. Not that they care, because what they've basically said is they're disgusting.
Well, they are, and they're also costly. So that was another smart like a fox, dumb like a fox kind of thing, because now they're saving big money. They no longer have to board the silly thing.
Well, I'll tell you, in the last couple of weeks, Alaska is 2 for 2 on their PR moves.
Yeah.
You know what this seems to me is... It makes me think that this is kind of like a dry run for the airlines for the real thing. I mean, I don't think this is really the real thing yet as far as air travel is concerned, but in a way it's kind of like a dry run for it. I mean, they get to sort of practice, you know, it's you know, post SARS and how do they respond and you know, it has that advantage maybe.
Well, it's mostly a PR issue. That's why they're putting the doctors on the planes, even though it's stupid. I'm amazed Lufthansa has that many doctors. Delta had 0 doctors.
Yeah, where do you find 40 doctors?
Well, they're probably fresh out of medical school, I'm guessing. I mean, I could be wrong. I certainly don't want to offend German doctors worldwide, but I'm not thinking that that's a very high-rated gig for a guy that, you know, who's a physician. But
yeah, right.
I mean, goodness thanks.
Yep, agreed. we did get an email from Steve Vischer this week that had a cartoon in it that I thought was absolutely hilarious. Apparently, yes, they're using these infrared scanners in airports now to see if you're running a fever.
Right.
And in the cartoon is a gentleman who's being scanned by this infrared scanner, and on the scanner you see him and you see the Grim Reaper standing behind him, touching him on the shoulder, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yep.
Not bad enough. They're probing my daddy parts and making me take off my pants and do all. Now they're taking my temperature too.
Moving into our next story, this from Business Week. One of the exciting stories in aviation that's been developing and will continue to develop over the next 2 months. Boeing 787 advancing towards test flight by July 1st. The first Boeing 787 is in the final stages of production and should be ready as planned for the long-delayed first test flight before July 1st, Boeing company officials said Wednesday. About 60% of the material needed to certify the 787 as an airplane and to certify assembly processes has been submitted to the FAA. Boeing officials would not give a tentative date for the first flight, only that it is planned in the second quarter with takeoff from Payne Field, south of Everett, and landing about 3 hours later at King County International Airport, known as Boeing Field in Seattle. Interestingly, six planes, four with Rolls-Royce engines, two with GE engines, are being assembled for about 8.5 months of test flights, about 2 months fewer than for previous models, followed by FAA airworthiness certification for commercial service and the first delivery in the first quarter of 2010. This is getting exciting. Don't forget that John Ostrower made the prediction. I think it was the 25th of June, he said, which was a number out of thin air.
That's right, but
has anybody got a pool betting the over and under on?
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. We should start.
Oh, sure.
One. Yeah. This is exciting. I mean, we haven't really seen something like this since, well, I mean, really the A380.
That's true.
Yeah, and John's got some really nice photographs on his flight blogger site that's really worth checking out. Beautiful, beautiful looking aircraft, certainly.
Yeah, and really, John Ostrower is your source for 787 news and pictures. You can find John's blog at flightglobal.com/flightblogger.
Now, I think a first flight in the first quarter of 2010 is sort of a compression, I guess, from the time period the time it normally takes Boeing to deliver a new airplane after first flight, right? That's normally 10 months. And I noticed in the Seattle paper that Boeing is saying this is looking like 8 months, so sort of a 20% compression in their time.
Hmm. Those are cool pictures. I was just glancing at them. Some everybody really ought to look those up. Those are neat pictures.
Yeah,
really.
Absolutely. Sure. And if you're following John on Twitter, he's Flight Blogger on Twitter. He is posting a lot of pictures as he takes them as they move. I believe it came out of paint. Was it yesterday or 2 days ago? And it was kind of neat to be able to follow him and follow the aircraft that was as it was moved from the paint hangar to the fuel bay, whatever they call it. You know, it looks like everything's progressing. If the second quarter being the end at June 30th, then we should expect something before then. Definitely one of the top stories we'll be following throughout the next couple months.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the nose, looking at a picture of the nose in profile, it looks just like a de Havilland Comet.
You know what? It really does. I couldn't put my finger on it, but you're absolutely right, Kevin.
Nova has a better service record.
Yeah, no kidding.
For now, the nose doesn't, yeah. Huh, boy. All you youngsters out there, be sure to get your Jane's All aircraft out and look up de Havilland Comet.
And find one with square windows.
That's right. There used to be one at O'Hara that they parked out there for years and years and years. Everybody, it was like for sale for like a dollar, but nobody wanted to go within 50 yards of it.
It was cursed.
It was right near the Navy ramp. Anyway.
Okay, moving into our next story. This comes from ComoNews.com, actually out of Washington. A small plane crashed into a storage yard full of portable potties Friday afternoon near Thune Field just minutes after taking off from the field. Pilot Clifford Howell of Lake Bay, Washington, told investigators at about 150 feet in the air, his engine quit. He banked and tried to make it back to the runway, but came up short. He apparently ended up in a storage facility for porta potties.
Upside down.
Upside down.
Which meant he was on the porta potty side of that.
Witnesses say the plane bounced off rows of portable toilets in a storage yard at the north end of the field, flipped, then landed upside down on a pile of wood chips. I could tell he was in a bit of trouble, said the witness, but I thought he could make it over the toilets back there. I don't know why that statement struck me as hilarious.
He was that close to making it.
We thought he... But if you look, there's nothing, there's really nothing next to the toilets. It's kind of an empty field. They did say in the article that he kind of took a nosedive. And I think what's in piloting 101, and Kevin, maybe you can back me up on this, but the first thing that came to mind, and maybe this is our PSA for the Airplane Geeks podcast, is if you lose an engine on takeoff, the first thing you need to do is lower the nose and look straight ahead, because chances are, especially at about 150 feet in the air, you're not going to make it back to the airport.
Yeah, you're definitely not. And that was the first problem I had with this guy, was you don't try to turn back. It looks like, from the looks of the wreckage, looks like he might have, I don't see how many porta potties that he hit. It looks like he just stalled.
Right, exactly.
Hit one and flipped over. But, yeah, you know, as a matter of fact, in primary flight training, at least when I taught actively, that was an exercise we would do at altitude, is trying to determine or get in their thick little heads how much altitude it took to do an engine out 180.
It's a lot.
You know. Yeah, I seem to remember 300-something feet in a Cessna 150, but I'm sure all the other aviation geeks out there will be emailing in with the exact figure. I hope.
I thought it was closer to 500, but I think that's because they didn't want to... I did my pilot training out in... Northern Indiana, where there's nothing but fields, so I think they just wanted us to just keep going. But you know, it really kind of brings new meaning to, you know, stalling into the crapper.
Yeah,
and look,
somebody had to go there. I'm glad it was you, but yeah,
who else, Kevin? I am the low part of this podcast. That's been well established 45 episodes now.
Well, to jump in here and to jump in the poo here, this guy that they're getting quotes from, where do they seek out the dumbest guy they can find when they go to a crash scene? Do they like hold auditions? If he had made the runway, he would have landed a lot harder than he did by smashing into these sandy cans and emptying up upside down. What the heck? If he made the runway, first of all, it would have been a miracle of modern science, because it would have been impossible. But landing in porta potty, and then the other quote is, it probably saved his life, I would think. No, actually, if the field was empty, I think it would have gone a little better.
Yeah.
No. Smashing in the buildings is not, we don't search for a building, you know, although people think we do. We're generally not searching for a building to impact with as we land.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe a lot of smaller fiberglass buildings filled with blue juice.
And they're probably with service, so we're not probably talking a lot of, you know, they probably don't put them in the little storage area unserviced.
I would hope
they're probably
not.
Empty.
I would hope not.
I would think they'd be empty of blue fluid, wouldn't they, if you're just going to store them? I mean, I don't know. We need to get a porta potty expert online.
The pilot was okay. He had an impact injury to his forehead, and for precautionary reasons, they sent him to Good Samaritan Hospital in town there to get checked out, and he is fine. They don't know why the plane's engine cut out, but the FAA is investigating, and it has been known that the junior FAA investigators were sent out to this one.
Yeah.
All the senior guys bid. They bid the other ones.
They'll pass on this one.
This is cutting edge stuff. The president's going to want to get a report on this right away.
Yeah, well, we're glad to see that that he's okay. In other kind of slapstick news, this from the Daily News.
Speaking of the president.
Speaking of the president. Very good segue, Max.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
We asked for your Photoshopped Air Force One photos, and you delivered. On Monday, the presidential jet and an F-16 fighter plane buzzed over Lower Manhattan for a photo op of the first plane with New York City landmarks. The stunt sparked fears of terror attacks and cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. We suggested the White House staffers could have gotten better results for a lot less money from the comforts of their own D.C. offices using a program like, you guessed it, Photoshop. And you proved us right. These user submissions are pretty darn funny. The first one, and Kevin, I think you now have this as your wallpaper on your computer. Shows Luke Skywalker in looking out over the landscape of what was it Tatooine, his planet, with the multiple suns out there, and there's Air Force One flying over. That was pretty good. There's
along with the caption, "Use the Air Force One, Luke."
Yeah, use the Air Force One. I didn't even see that, Max.
Me either. I just now noticed that. I love that. It's great.
There's another ancient picture of the Brooklyn Bridge, probably right after it was built, with Air Force One flying over in sepia tone. There's King Kong swatting at Air Force One from the top of, I think that is supposed to be the Chrysler Building. And then some more huddling in the tunnels in Central Park as Air Force One flies below treetop level.
You skipped the Air Force One passing between the woman's legs.
Yes, you're right.
From the Bond film. James Bond film. I don't remember whose legs those are.
But this is a story we didn't talk about, mostly because it happened, I think, the day after we recorded our last podcast. And that was the Air Force One flyby and just exactly what they were thinking.
Yeah, I you know, if I'd been in Manhattan and heard a, you know, or seen a 747 flying at 1500 feet or whatever it was, I think I would just freak out. I think I would do what everybody else did and scramble out of the buildings in a panic.
And while I definitely understand the insensitivity with which this was done, I didn't realize how much of a panic this created in Manhattan, as some of the 911 tapes were played and people were screaming in the streets. It was a panic in Manhattan.
You know, there's not a whole... What I'd heard was they actually had flown at low level between the Statue of Liberty and Ground Zero, you know, Wall Street. There's not a whole lot of room between the lady and Wall Street.
No, there's not.
Right.
And then they got the stupid thing trailed by a fighter.
I know.
How many people on the street would recognize that it was Air Force One anyway? And plus, how many movies has Air Force One been taken over by the bad guy? Pretty much every one it's ever been in. So... It just was, it was like they went out and actively tried to do something awful. So it just was dumb.
You know,
it's our bonehead move.
And my thought here is, of all the support people that are involved with this kind of flyby, don't you think one of them would have said, look, this is a really bad idea. And you've got the pilots of Air Force One. You've got the controller who was dealing with them in the airspace. You've got the pilot of the F-16.
Where's the voice of reason?
You know, maybe you don't question where Air Force One goes, but yeah.
And you got a chief master, well, not chief master, Navy, but you got a super duper enlisted guy running the panel, and not to mention all the support guys. Not one of them said, wait a minute, this just, you know, come on, this just doesn't seem right, guys. Not to mention the cost. And this cost figure I came up with is probably inaccurate, but I did some research because I wrote an article about something else about Air Force One a while back, including all the support crew and all. It comes to about $621,000 a flight hour to operate that thing.
Wow.
Factor in the limos.
Sure.
You know, and you have there's not one of them. There's two of them. So obviously they didn't fly two of them that day.
Sure.
But it's still a couple hundred grand to do that. So.
And what's Photoshop run these days? $300?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think because of the new Recovery Act, I think we all get a free copy of Photoshop. Maybe that's what they were doing. Maybe they were doing that, and when everybody goes, oh, you should have used Photoshop, then he can get on his every other day news conference and go, by the way, I've licensed everybody a copy of Photoshop. So this will never happen again.
Well, moving into our last story, this comes from Steve Vischer, theheraldsun.com.au. Tired pilots plea. Three Emirates pilots have spoken out about fatigue problems at the airline, saying passenger safety is under threat. The pilots, who all currently fly for the airline, spoke separately to the Sunday Herald Sun to outline concerns about fatigue, morale, and management of the United Arab Emirates-based airline. The men's concerns came after the Australian Transportation Safety Bureau made a preliminary finding that fatigue did not appear to be a factor in the accident of an Emirates jet at Melbourne Airport on March 20th. The comments by the ATSB came even though the pilot had barely slept the day before the accident and had flown 98.9 hours in the previous month. You are allowed a maximum of 100. If you remember back, this is the story of the A340 that basically had a tail drag and knocked out some antennas off the end of the runway, was able to make it airborne and back to the airport just in time to let the passengers off and lose their tickets.
For flying Emirates.
Yeah, thanks for flying Emirates. I don't think
we appreciate your business.
I don't think we really followed up on the cause, and that was there was bad weight information entered into the flight computer, which is now being tracked back to the rest and fatigue of the pilots, which the Australian Transportation Safety Bureau has ruled out. Here, the Emirates pilots are saying, hey, look, you can't really rule it out here. I mean, and the problem is you can't quantify fatigue.
No. Can't.
And this is
can measure hours, but that's
right.
It.
And this is a big deal. It is a much larger deal than we realize in the industry, especially as they're flying this many hours.
Yeah. I've flown with, when I was an engineer, I've had both the captain and the co-pilot fall asleep on me. And, you know, that stuff happens. And the way the things are set up now, used to be, I think the story mentions that most normal airlines fly about a 70 to an 80 hour cap. We called it the cap. But as time went by and the economy got worse and pilots got greedier to try to maintain their lifestyles, they kept agreeing to more and more. And of course, I know in the U.S. 100 is the limit. I don't know internationally. I don't really remember, but I'm assuming that it's still the limit internationally. But you know, there should be no surprise that a guy that flew really within a hair of 100 hours and had no sleep would make big mistakes. I mean, even if you say that fatigue is a relative thing, there isn't a person on the planet that wouldn't be making mistakes after that.
Right. Absolutely.
Not to mention, international, they cross so many time zones that I know that sounds trite, but people say they do it all the time, but they generally do it once every 6 months, not once a week. So, you know, there and back is, I don't know if they were nonstop out of the Emirates or not, but, you know, I was always a big complainer about fatigue because I'm basically a tree sloth, but a certain level of fatigue makes you safer when you fly because you pay more attention and you tell the other guys. That happens a lot where you'll go, hey, guys, I didn't get any sleep last night, so keep an eye on me. But if they're flying 11, 12, 14-hour legs, you know, internationally, if it's three guys, then that's an augmented crew, so it probably was less than that. They had, you know, a relief guy, because the really long international crews carry two full crews. So, I mean, that's just my comment is, it's always been a problem, but because it's an economic issue, the airlines have always poo-pooed it, and the FAA, I think still today, has been in the business of making sure airlines make money. They're not in the business of regulating them. So they pretty much, well, for example, at my airline, we had are you familiar with the 30 and 7 rule?
Yes.
Okay. The way that if you were exceeding 30 and 7 or if you were exceeding 8 hours and 24, you know, that rule, the rules, and again, the geeks will probably be writing emails about this. The rule, as I remember it, simply said that you may not fly more than 30 block hours in a 7-day period, and you may not fly more than, this is domestic, you may not fly more than 8 hours in a 24-hour period, and then there were rest requirements after that. You know, you have to rest twice the amount of flight time and a bunch of other garbage, which I'm amazed I even remember. It's been so long. But at our airline, we kept having these abnormals where you'd be on duty 15 hours, you know, and you'd be flying pretty daggum close to 8 hours, and then they'd call you up right at the near the end of a 13-hour duty day and say, oh, we need you to reposition the airplane 3 hours away. And you'd go, well, that's against the FARs. Well, they went to the FAA and got a ruling that said you could catch up on your rest the next time you went home.
Right.
So you could be on a 15-hour duty day followed by a 6-hour layover followed by another 15-hour duty day ad infinitum until you were released from duty at some unknown point. And what was left of you was sent home to rest, and then you were supposed to rest there. So what good was that for safety?
And, you know, the rest requirements, as you get into daily issues, are so confusing. And it really does take either a rocket scientist or several years of experience to really have a solid grasp on them. And here's the thing. The time when you really need them is when you're dog tired.
Yeah, when the weather's off.
Yeah, and the weather's...
Yeah, mechanicals, yeah. You know what, though? I'll say this in defense of the airline that I flew for and most of the other airlines that I've heard of. I know there's some bad stories, but they never questioned when I was a captain. Whenever we said we were too tired, we would just shut it down, and they never questioned it, not once. If they offered us a situation like I mentioned earlier, and I just said, look, there's no way my crew is tired, and you use the key words, which is you would say, I'm sorry, but we're too fatigued to continue. It's going to be unsafe if we continue. As soon as you say unsafe, it's the end of the story. They would shut it down and get us a hotel room. They wouldn't be happy about it, but they never questioned it or made a fuss.
That's good.
Explain that to a chief pilot or write a letter or anything.
Right,
and there's no stigma attached to that?
So what you need is a crew that has the courage. Because that's true for most airlines. There's no airline in the world that's going to make you continue to fly after you tell them it's unsafe
right.
for you to continue. Because guess what's going to be on CNN the next morning if you run off a runway?
Right.
You know. So you just what the crews do is they get namby-pamby and everybody follows the captain's lead. And usually what he'll say is, well, I guess I'm feeling okay. Do you guys mind if we continue? And of course he's the captain, so you say, hey, whatever you say, boss, let's go. You know. So it's up to the captain to say, you know what, this is getting really crazy. Let's go, you know, catch a nap and a meal.
But let's consider a situation that I would see a lot, and that is you have an evening rotation. You arrive at 1 a.m. You have 24 hours the next day, and then you depart at 5 a.m. on the third day. So you have over 24 hours of rest. That was the worst for me. Because I am asleep at 1, you know, wake up at, you know, if I get 8 hours, 8, maybe 9, and then I'm supposed to go to bed at 7, 8?
Yeah, it never worked. Yeah, and that most of our rotations ended that way if you were junior, you know, especially like on the 7-5 and back when I was on the 7-2 even when it used to go to the West Coast. Because all the all-nighters from the West Coast would leave then. You'd get back
right.
in. To like to O'Hare or Cincinnati or Atlanta or wherever at like 5:36 in the morning. And that wasn't the worst part. The worst part was they would add two legs to the end of that. So you're up all night, you watch the sun come up, you're totally well-rested legally. Like you said, you got a 24-hour break. And then they add on a Chicago turn. Man, talk about hot sand in your eye.
Yeah.
You know,
and
that's where you start making your mistakes is once the sun, the most painful thing is when that sun comes up, you know.
I always equated being fatigued to tunnel vision. Now, you don't get actual tunnel vision. If you do, you're way past fatigued and you need to just go pass out somewhere. But it's difficult to explain and to even really kind of recognize when you're fatigued sometimes. And it always felt like tunnel vision. Not that you couldn't see things, but you always had to pay attention to something in particular and only one thing at a time.
Yeah.
And so if there's two things going on, something is being left. And it's kind of a progression between, you know, the number of things that you can pay attention to until you're fatigued and you can only focus on the one thing, and something gets left just for lack of mental capacity.
Well, another thing people miss, and this story didn't mention it because it's kind of a non-issue nobody wants to talk about, but almost all the airlines have closed most of their pilot bases. So almost every pilot I know, including me, spends a large part of their career commuting. So when I flew international on the 777 out of Atlanta, I commuted to it from Lexington. So you had to get to the airport in Lexington at least 2 hours before you, it was post 9/11, so, you know, a couple hours before your flight. And it was, we had the jump seat, so, but you always still had to have a backup. So you left a flight early, which means you're leaving your hometown. In my case, I'm pretty close to Atlanta, but I was still leaving my hometown about 7 or 8 hours before sign-in. So then you get to the, you know, Atlanta, and then you've got like 5 or 6 or 7 hours to kill. And then there's a 2 hour before departure sign-in international, so you're kind of bumming around there. Then you climb in the jet, and you got 9 more right. hours, right? So it would get to be by, and then of course in Europe, you have to wait for your hotel room. It's kind of a tradition. They have even have little waiting areas for you. So it's usually an hour to 2 hour wait for your room once you finally get to the hotel. So it was routine for me to be in between beds, you know, actually being laying down in a real bed, sometimes, always over 24 hours, but sometimes around 36 hours. So when by the time I'm trying to make that ILS approach in bad weather in the dark in Paris, I've already been up and moving around for over 24 hours. Now, I may have caught a nap for an hour or so, but... And you do have, you know, dozing for dollars. You get to go in the back for a couple of hours and nap while they're serving dinner and showing movies. But you don't really get any real REM, you know.
Right. Not to completely just harp on fatigue, but I do think that this is a serious issue. But why I think it's so significant what happened in Melbourne, I believe it was Melbourne, is because this is the type of accident you see with fatigue. Not the... emergency that they were just too tired to deal with. As soon as something happens, no matter how tired, the adrenaline kicks in and you're focused. It's the mundane things that get overlooked because you don't even realize you overlooked them. And that's exactly what happened here.
Yep.
So, okay. Moving into our main topic, again, we're talking with Kevin Garrison. He is the author of The CEO of the Cockpit, which is now in paperback. Is it in the stores yet, Kevin?
Yeah, it'll probably be. It's available on barnesandnoble.com now. You can order it and on amazon.com and all the other sites. It won't be in any stores for another week or two, and I don't really, since it's a flying book, you know, how many flying books are there in bookstores?
Right.
So I don't really foresee huge boxes of them being unloaded next to Harry Potter's. So, yeah, that's available now.
Kevin, tell us a little bit about the book. What inspired you to write it, and then what, just kind of what it's about.
Okay, the CEO of the Cockpit is actually mainly based on a column I've written for AvWeb.com over the past. 5 years. They asked me to 5 years ago to write a short humor column, short being about 1,500 words or so monthly. And I came up with the idea of writing the CEO of the Cockpit. It's kind of a sarcastic captain that kind of pontificates. And let me back up another step. The CEO of the Cockpit is basically a ripoff of a book called The CEO of the Sofa by P.J. O'Rourke. And he, in turn, ripped his idea off from Oliver Wendell Holmes, who wrote The Aristocrat at the Breakfast Table back in the early 1800s. Oliver Wendell Holmes was, he's fairly famous, but he wasn't actually the jurist. He was actually a very popular author. Anyway, going way back to the 1800s, that book was basically a blowhard who kind of held forth at a boarding house every night talking about current events and his kind of skewed take on it. P.J. O'Rourke did the same thing with his book, except using a political motif where P.J.'s just an incredibly gifted writer, and if I could be like him, I'd die happy. So I thought it was okay to steal from him. And the CEO of the Cockpit, getting back to reality, is a fictional captain kind of made up of all the captains I ever flew with, and probably made up a lot of me, that he could say outrageous stuff in the column because he was fictional, and I always had different guest co-pilots and guest jump seat riders and things like that, and we would talk about different issues like guns in the cockpit, kind of like what we're doing here in the podcast, only a whole lot more cynical and hopefully a lot pretty funny. And then over the years, I gathered these, and the CEO of the cockpit on AvWeb is kind of on hiatus due to the economy. He's only coming out every 3 or 4 months now. And as a matter of fact, the last CEO of the cockpit column I wrote, the CEO just scared the hell out of me because he up and retired on me halfway through the column. And I know that sounds weird. And any writers out there maybe can relate. And I know people are going, well, that's just stupid. You knew he was good. No, I didn't. I was writing the guy, and we were moving along pretty good halfway through the column. I forget what we were talking about. And then suddenly he decided to retire, and then the second half of the column was him getting ready to retire. So I don't know how many more of those AvWeb is going to run, since I'm not going to be writing much about airlines anymore. But I've been away from the airline world now for around 4 years, a little bit over 4 years. And it was getting to the point where I wasn't really, I wasn't being very relevant anymore, because I hadn't actually been in an airline cockpit for years. I've still got lots of friends that are, and I talk to them, but it's not quite the same. So I decided it was time. Maybe I did decide to retire the guy. It just got to the point where it was getting silly, because it was getting to be that I was writing mostly about memories, and the current readers probably aren't interested in hearing my memories, but hopefully book readers are, because I've gotten a lot of good letters from people, and I've heard over the years that I've had well over 300,000 readers of this column worldwide, and they, over the years, a lot of them have asked me to compile them into a book. So I did a few surprises here and there, and had the freedom to change quite a few words to the original words that I wanted, but that were bleeped out for legal reasons. In other words, I could work a little bluer in this book. Although, kids, be sure to buy it, because it's really not that bad. And it's kind of 320 pages of a crotchety airline captain holding forth on a whole bunch of different issues, only some of which are about flying. And so I hope it'll, you know, be a huge success, and the movie will be great. But kind of felt like I needed it to come out, and so hopefully it'll be successful, and if not, then it'll look good on my shelf.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Kevin, to be completely honest with you, I haven't had a chance to check out any of the book. I know it's been available for online purchase for quite some time. How long has that been?
Oh, gosh, 7 or 8 months at least. I kind of put it out on Lulu.com initially, kind of as a beta version, if that makes sense to any of you older folks out there, and to kind of see where the big mistakes were, and people that and friends of mine looked at it and got back to me, and we made quite a few corrections and redesigned it and all that kind of stuff, and now we're offering it through a publisher called ASJA Press. It's still POD partially, but it's also going to be on bookshelves because we have a return policy and all that sort of stuff with this particular publisher.
Was it difficult to get placement at the major outlets, the bookstores and Amazon? I'm thinking, for people who are considering maybe doing some writing, or
we had a deal. ASJA is the American Society of Journalists and Authors, and it's a group of freelance writers based in New York. Fairly old. I think we just had our 70th birthday, 60th or 60th birthday this year. And I'm on the board of directors, so I get a couple free trips to New York. It's a great bunch of people. Had people like Betty Friedan and George Plimpton and a bunch of other people in there. Generally, when they get real successful, they don't come to meetings anymore. But what was your question again? No, I can't remember the question.
No, just about the difficulty or not of getting published.
Oh, piece of cake. Anybody that wants to publish a book can do it. Lulu's a real easy way to do it. If you want it done professionally so people will buy it and read it, that's a whole different animal. You got to worry about design and, accuracy and editing and formatting and they have services that you can pay for that provide that. In other words, you can hire their editing service to do line editing and content editing and stuff like that, and you can hire designers. So you can start at the couple hundred dollar level, and then you can actually go up to the point where you're buying promotion packages for $20,000 or $30,000.
Wow. Do you run across many pilots who are also writers?
I have during my life, yeah. I got to meet Ernest Gann years and years ago for a short while. When I was a line boy in Lakeland, Florida, I got to know Richard Bach pretty well. He had his P-51 in our hangar, and I had a crush on his girlfriend.
How'd that work out?
It's kind of a funny story. I can't remember if he was living with her at the time or not, but then Betsy, if you're out there, it was Betsy Brown. If you're out there, Betsy, you know, call me. But I was just this pimply faced line boy, and I took her flying in the Aerobat one day and showed her spins. And, you know, she'd already been flying with Richard for a long time, and she showed me a bunch of other aerobatic maneuvers, which embarrassed me and made me a little sick. So she ended up being a wing walker for the Pierce brothers. But anyway, that should be in my next book.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So a classmate of mine at Delta was Rob Buck, Robert Buck's son. And Rob was real big into sailplanes. And Rob, if you're listening, you should call me too, because I kind of miss you. And he's an excellent writer. And, of course, a lot of the guys, I write for different aviation magazines now. And there's a lot of talented people out there who write. And there are a few guys in the airlines, and I can't remember, not Dean Koontz. There was some Dale Brown. Now, I've never read his stuff, but he was an airline pilot, and he always writes all these, like, 707 to Hell kind of books.
Oh, yeah.
And evidently, he's real famous, and I apologize to him. I'm not forgetting him because I'm trying to be, you know, better than him. Honestly, I've seen his books, but I haven't read any yet. So, you know, I wish him well. He's probably a multi-billionaire by now. But it's a kind of an endeavor that lends itself to pilots because you can do it on layovers. And once you get to be an airline pilot, you really hate the idea of people telling you what to do, especially once you're a captain. So it's a good fallback career when they cancel your pension.
Yeah.
You can start writing books, and you don't have to do the 9-to-5 and have people go on TV and say, he was such a nice guy until he killed everybody in the building. I don't understand what happened.
Yeah, right.
You know, but that's pretty much it. Most pilots I know are extremely talented in one way or another outside of the cockpit. You know, they're either lawyers or they're really talented artists or something, you know.
Well, again, that's Kevin Garrison, author of the new book, The CEO of the Cockpit. You can also check out Kevin at his website. That's kevincreates.com.
In the blog.
Yeah. I have the Hoglog blog.
Oh, that's right. I completely forgot.
Yeah. And it actually, it's been doing pretty good. The Hoglog blog is actually published with Cessna Flyer and Piper Flyer magazine. And then I do the blog that I can't remember why, if anybody else remembers what Hoglog is, but I think I explained that the last time we met, so I probably won't waste any of your time with that. But actually, it's pretty timely now with the swine flu. I think my hits ought to be going up.
Kevin, thanks again for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me. I look forward to seeing. I'm running about every 20 episodes here, so around number 67.
Yeah, five, you know, that's right.
We'll look you up.
Thanks again to Kevin. Now Max has his pick of the week.
My pick this week is airsports.tv. This is an internet TV channel that has a lot of competitive air sport video, including the official world championships and the World Cups and other major international air sports competitions. They have some exclusive access to some events, but they also cover aerobatics, aero modeling, believe it or not. Air racing, ballooning, gliding, hang gliding and paragliding, helicopters, microlights, parachuting, kind of anything that flies through the air that people compete with or race against each other. They're looking to create a community, kind of they call it engaged enthusiasts, competitors, and experts. And they're also looking to promote air sports across the world, which is good. And you can actually contribute your own video content from events if you have it, or you can watch their broadcast quality video, or and you can even upload some of your own videos if you like. You can sign up to get news and content updates by email, which is kind of handy, so you don't have to constantly go to the site to see what new air competitions have been put up there. But it's kind of exciting, and it's also a nice way to kind of check out some varieties of air sports that you may not be familiar with. So that's my pick this week. That's at www.airsports.tv.
We do have quite a few listener emails and voicemail. I want to get to the voicemail first.
Hi, guys. I just got done listening to episode 45. I have a comment about the unmanned airline flights. I think if they were really cheap, people would fly it until the plane crashed, i.e. the Airbus incident. Also, I got an idea for the T-shirt, Airplane Geeks, Jake Stigum. And then I'd have a picture of a pilot with his aviator sunglasses and maybe a scarf with a girl on his left side there. But thanks, guys. I love the podcast.
I like the girl on the side part of that.
Yeah, I do too. And thanks to whoever that was. Didn't get your name, but definitely appreciate it. And we're getting some good ideas for the T-shirt, so make sure they keep coming in. Rolls right into an email that I got. Excuse me while I open this up. This came from Richard. He says he had three different ideas for a large logo shirt. These are good ideas. The only problem is, and he does point this out as well, it uses the Rolls-Royce and GE logos, which I'm not quite sure our crack legal team would be able to defend our use of their corporate logos.
No, those are trademarked.
But it says Airplane Geeks, and you replace the R in the airplane with the Rolls-Royce logo and the GE of the geeks with the GE logo. I think it's brilliant.
It is pretty funny. It's too bad Pratt & Whitney's logo is an eagle, because whereas the other two have
right.
the letters that you can substitute. The best I could come up with is, I mean, if there was a PW, you could replace the PL with PW.
Yes, you could. That's a good one. Airplane Geeks.
Airplane Geeks. It's the best I could do.
But there's no PW.
It's a clever idea. Very.
It is a clever idea. So, Richard, we thank you for that email. A couple other emails we did get. Quite a few. This one came from Mike. He says, I'm really enjoying your weekly podcasts, downloading them through iTunes and listening to them on the train to work. He also says, is there any chance you could have Saj Ahmad from Fleet Buzz Editorial in as your guest? I'm sure there are more than a few enthusiasts out there keen to hear from him. Thanks and give up the good work. Signed, Mike. Mike, thanks for the email. As far as guests on the podcast, we are always interested in talking people to people as guests, and we definitely appreciate the suggestions. In fact, Max is the connoisseur of Airplane Ooh. Geeks guests.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get in touch with him, and maybe we can entice him to join us on the podcast.
Absolutely. And if anybody else has any suggestions, or if anybody happens to know Herb Kelleher personally, that would be an interesting interview. So, Mike, again, thanks for the email. We move into the next email. This comes from Grant. He says, this is like a meta email, Max. He says, I totally forgot to send a second email after the first one, R.E. Fatties, to say, thanks heaps for reading out my email in the last show. I finally got to hear the end of the show a while after I sent the email. He says, thanks, guys. Really appreciate the readout and comments. He says, aw, shucks. And see, this is how seriously we take listener feedback. Because when you send us listener feedback about listener feedback, we put that on the show as well.
It doesn't get better.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't get any better than that. We have reached podcasting genius, Max.
There it is.
So thanks, Grant, for saying that again. Got a comment on the website from Justin. It was actually a joke, and this one is definitely worth sharing. Although I'm going to have to sanitize a little bit to keep our clean rating. But let me read the joke to you. This is worth reading. A guy is sitting in the bar and departures at a busy airport. Beautiful woman walks in and sits down at the table next to him. He decides, because she has a uniform, she's probably an off-duty flight attendant. So he decides to have a go at picking her up by identifying the airline she flies for. He leans across to her and says the Delta Airlines motto, "We love to fly and it shows." The woman looks at him blandly. He sits back and thinks up another line. He leans forward again and delivers the Air France motto, "Winning the hearts of the world." Again, she just stares at him with a slightly puzzled look on her face. Undeterred, he tries again, this time saying the Malaysian Airlines motto, "Going beyond expectations." The woman looks at him sternly and says, "What the blank do you want?" "Ah," he says, "Ryanair."
Oh, that's really clever.
So, Justin, Max and I both got a huge kick out of that email today. We do, or this week, we do appreciate it. Another email here from Richard. He says, recalls something on one of our podcasts about the airlines being behind the times regarding new media. Someone at corporate must have tuned you in because they just released on Skynet that United is on Twitter, and that is correct, and we are following United. And in fact, they have responded to me directly as I tweeted them and asked them if they were serious this time about being on Twitter, and they said they were, and it seems as though they're following through with it. So as much as we like to bash United Airlines, because it's easy, they are making attempts, and you really have to hand it to them. In fact, today they tweeted some deals that they were offering over Twitter. So congratulations to United Airlines. You can follow them at twitter.com/United Airlines. And I'll tell you what, we would appreciate it if listeners of the Airplane Geeks who are on Twitter follow United Airlines, and on behalf of the Airplane Geeks podcast, congratulate them for joining Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the 21st century, because really, it really is a good thing. And they are a nice group of people that are handling the Twitter. I don't know who it is, but they at least have a sense of humor about all the stuff that they've been through. So congratulations to United Airlines. Rich also says that they have a YouTube channel as well. He hasn't seen it. And keep up the great work. Thank you again, Richard. That's it for emails. Don't forget that you can send us some listener feedback to the email address by sending it to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. You can also go to the website. We have a contact form there. That seems to be a preferred way for some of the people to contact us. You can also give us a call and leave us a voicemail in which your lovely voice can be heard on the podcast. That number is 812-757-4252. Give us a call. We'll get you on the podcast. Don't forget to go to the website. We have the newsletter, which I just realized, Max, didn't go out last week, so I apologize. You have my apologies. But sign up for the newsletter on the website, where you can do a bunch of other cool things, such as read show notes that take me a little bit of time to put together. So please enjoy them. I also want to point out another way, again, as my shameless plug, another way that you can support us is by going to quote.me, that's quote.me/beta, and pick, there's only two podcasts there, but choose the Airplane Geeks podcast and pick your favorite parts of the podcast. It can be this one, it could be anyone back all the way to the first episode. Pick your favorite ones out, the time that it starts and the time that it ends. It'll create a little excerpt. You can share it with your friends. It's a great way to share the Airplane Geeks podcast with those who maybe don't want to download the entire thing and listen to us blab on for an hour, but to share good pieces of information with them and to kind of increase our exposure. So we definitely appreciate that that support from our listeners as well. Again, that's kwote.me/beta and go to Airplane Geeks podcast. Thank you to all of us who have reviewed us on iTunes. That's another way you can help us, and we appreciate that. And also follow us on Twitter. We are Airplane Geeks. You can also follow us individually, myself at Miller22, and Max?
Is Max Flight.
Great. Big thanks again to Kevin Garrison. One more time, you can find his blog at kevincreates.com/blog. That's the Hoglog blog. And also make sure to check out his book, The CEO of the Cockpit, which will be in stores this week. And I want to impress that this is, even though New Media is kind of new in its infancy, our support of people such as Kevin and his books is important in kind of the maturation of New Media and the tight community that we claim to be creating around the podcast. So it is very important, and we do really ask that you support the guests that we have on the podcast, and this is a great way to do that. And that's if you're at all interested, check out Kevin's book, The CEO of the Cockpit. Max, I think I've rambled on long enough. I hope we're still connected.
Yes, we are.
Do you have a word of wisdom for us?
Actually, no, I don't.
Oh, well, I have Richard Abilafia quote of the week. It comes from Kevin Garrison. Planes get dirty.
There it is.
Thanks, Max, for joining me. Thanks, Kevin, for joining us again this week. Thank you to all the listeners. That's it for episode 46. Join us next week on episode 47 of the Airplane Geeks podcast. We'll see you guys.
Take care, everybody.
And you can find them at flightglobal.com. Max, I'm just going to stop talking.
Yeah, he did .com like three times last when we had him on.
See, there's all those lalas in there.
Yeah, it's really the other guy's fault for writing.
You know, that is John's fault. John, too many L's in your title.
How are you, John?
Man, that's it. He's not allowed back until he gets rid of the L's. The article is, we asked for your show to... Jeez.
Your show to fop.